This year's Interfaith Alliance Walter Cronkite Faith and Freedom Awards ceremony took place in Washington, D.C. on April 4th. We have more highlights from that event. Here's Rabbi Jack Moline.
So now we get to talk for a few minutes. The first thing I'm going to do is ask you, Diane, would you say a few words about receiving this award tonight?
Oh, my goodness. The first thing that comes to mind is Jane Dixon. And being in New York with her and her family when she was presented with this award, and I was so happy for her and so touched and moved by her standing there and receiving the award so graciously. And now here I sit, reaching out to my beloved Jane and saying to her, Jane, darling, you are here.
Kizer, would you say a few words about the award and what it means to you?
So undeservingly, I sit here. When it was mentioned to me with whom I'll be sitting, I immediately agreed to come. Two reasons I came to join. One is my hero sits next to me. Thank you. You have given us courage. You have shown us light. You continue to grace us. Our prayers for your health, for very long life, so you can continue to lead us. Second reason, I'm so humbled as an ordinary person, modest person, undeserving of all this, is that wherever I have throughout the country, this is my 101st appearance in front of honorable citizen of this country. Wherever I have been, whenever there are members of interfaith sitting with community, the morale of community is so high. So high. They are so hopeful that that is how they will find the solution to what disturbs us, what worries us. So I came to pay tribute to Interfaith's efforts and leadership. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So a little bit of substance. Diane, the role of a free press in society presumes that overwhelmingly its guardians are honest brokers. With the rise of cable news and advocacy radio, it's become harder and harder to distinguish between analysis and opinion. Will you give us some advice on how to recognize genuine journalistic integrity and how to defend it against the spurious accusations about the so-called dishonest media?
You know, it is fascinating to me that this morning on the BBC, I heard a Syrian spokesperson responding to the gassing of Syrian citizens, mostly children, say, that's fake news. And I thought, where did you get that phrase but from the current president of the United States? And I was horrified. And I thought to myself, I now, as a podcaster, every print journalist, every television journalist, every radio journalist must work harder to make sure that what we tell is the truth. And when we make a mistake, we must correct it immediately. But there is another side, which is that the consumers of news must be more thoughtful and discretionary as to how and where they receive their news. So I will say to you that it is not only my responsibility, it is your responsibility to ensure that what you see, read, and hear is factual. And let us make sure we each understand the role of facts in this world.
Kizer, the Constitution was written in different times, perhaps simpler times. In a global community with borders that cannot effectively be controlled and the proliferation of ideas to individual citizens that are not just disturbing but sometimes even dangerous to American values, are there limitations we should consider to the Constitution, especially the First Amendment?
Oh, no. No, not at all. Let me explain. Rest of the world aspires to have these dignities that are enshrined in these amendments. Most people call them, those are written as amendments, but those are not amendments. Those are human dignities. Those are human rights that are enshrined there. There had not been more serious time so that we continue to hold on to these values. Look, the world is divided in two parts. One, governed by authoritarian regimes, dictators, rulers, deciding what rights you will have, what rights you will not have. On the other hand, we have self-determination. We decide who is going to govern. We make mistake, but we can correct it, and we shall correct the mistakes. So these values cannot be compromised under any circumstance. The rest of the world, the ideas are coming from different parts of the mankind. But look at the mankind. They are aspiring to have these fundamental rights and basic values in their life. Twice in my life, I have been without any. I have lived under martial law in Pakistan twice. No rights at all, rights to speak or write or assemble or have equal protection of law. So I know what it feels without these human dignities. Therefore, I will not agree to the proposal that we should reconsider. Times have moved on. Times are, the history is moving forward. But history has placed this nation, history has placed the values of this nation as beacon of hope. And we will not allow anyone to push back or anyone dare to change.
I agree.
So, Kizer, let me ask you another question then. Other than Interfaith Alliance, of course, where should America look for its next generation of leaders and heroes who will take over this good work that you're doing?
Forgive me if I lose my composure. A couple of nights ago, I was in Boston at a youth conference organized by ADL. 1,500 high school kids were sitting in the audience, and I was worried, will I be able to keep their attention for 10 minutes, 15 minutes? They all listened. This is the good news, and answering your question in a long-winded way, that is the hope and that is the good news. At the end, I could not think of how would I end this conversation that I explained to them how their time has come to lead us. Their time has come to lead us. So I invited a representative, a wonderful high school lady, to stage. That's the only thing I could think at the moment to convey the message and answer your question. I asked her to open her palms, open her hands, as she stood on in front of those wonderful, wonderful future leaders. I placed the Constitution in her palm, in her hand, and I closed it. And I said, you are the true custodians of this document henceforth. And they received it so well. They received it so well. So that is where lies the answer, that our future generation... Our future generation is the custodian of these values that are enshrined in the document in the Constitution.
So, Diane, I'm now going to ask you the hardest question of your life. Where are we going to find the next generation of heroes and leaders?
I would agree with Kezar that many of those young leaders are going to be found in the high schools and colleges of our country. But the teaching, the learning, must somehow focus on what the future may be. Today, I talked with David Rothkopf, and he said that within the next 20 years, computers will overtake our human intelligence, and that our bosses may be those computers. Now, I believe that young people, and I've seen them at work creating. I've seen them coming up with brand new programs, new solutions, new ways to do things that astonish me. And yet, at the same time, there is a certain fear ahead of us because, and here's the kicker, 12% of our members of Congress have any science or technology understanding in their realm. 12%! And that's where our world is going. So forgive me, Kezar, it seems to me that those young people must be trained to keep technology in the realm of human understanding. We are facing enormous challenges, and I fear that those computers may be overtaking the human brain, which is why the Interfaith Alliance and what you do to bring together people of all faiths and all understandings is so incredibly important.
So my last question for each of you, since you admire each other so much, Diane, what question would you ask Kezar?
Oh, boy.
Just one?
Just one. One question. How do you go on in the face of the loss of your son?
Diane, I'll let you ask me the question also so I can summarize it. Same question to me?
The same question, Kezar. What question would you ask Diane?
Yeah. Here is answer. My favorite poet, Rumi, says that when you look at a beautiful blooming tree, Your appreciation for that tree is not complete unless you think of those who have watered it, who have planted it, took care of it. Then only you will fully appreciate what you're looking at, what a beautiful thing you're looking at. Diane had been source of strength for me for many years. Throughout, Captain Himayun Khan passed in 2004, and we have grieved in the privacy and the dignity of our home, but then came a time to stand up for on behalf of everyone. The way he died, the way he gave last breath of his life, protecting those who he was serving, those who he was managing. That grace, the grace from you, Diane, listening to you so many years, made us, gave us enough courage. One more person in the audience stands here, Dr. Saeed, my teacher. Many years ago, we invited, he was our guest. We used to sit very peacefully in a corner whenever he would come to speak and tell us what life is about. And so it is teachers, it is thoughtful leaders like yourself that have brought us here. And I don't have a question to ask, but I am so honored to be sitting next to you, Diane. I am so honored sitting next to you, sitting in front of these wonderful patriots that they care for my country, for my nation so very much. I am sitting here among friends of interfaith. I have seen the heartened little communities whenever the interfaith leaders sit in those communities, and whenever I visit with them and I speak to them, their morale is so high up. I can compare where the interfaith leaders are not proactively joining hands. So thank you for your good work. That is my last question and last answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I am so honored.